What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Hoops Corner. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, Iceman himself, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Feeling well. I'm out today resting, just like all the Raptors.
Smart man. I wish we could say that about Jamal Murray. The banger in the paint, Rajon Walia, how you feeling?
You know what? I'm fucking tired. That's what I am. I'm fucking tired.
Damn. Oh my god, everyone just sounds like they need a rest day. Should we just call the podcast off?
I just need this playoffs to start. Like, I think this is the weekend the playoffs normally start, and this end of season is just too long.
Yeah, it's true. Remember back in the day when they used to do the 40 games and 40 nights advertisements? How sick were those to start off the playoffs every year? Like, the playoffs, you would start on like a Saturday, Sunday, you get like a full slate of games every day. Whew. Playoff time, man. I could only imagine. I guess we're like a month out, right? Play-in tournaments are like mid-May?
Yeah, they keep advertising on ESPN when they show their games. So I think it's like May 17th or 18th.
Nice, not bad. Tune in May 17th to watch Zion and Luka Doncic.
You mean Zion or LeBron?
If he's back.
Yeah, we'll see if the Lakers... See if the Lakers fall that far. They're free and like best defense in the league, even without LeBron and Anthony Davis. Led by Dennis Schroeder and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, apparently. On to more pressing news, guys. Monday night, the Nuggets are playing against the Warriors. Steph Curry drops 53, takes over the franchise leader in points, beating Wilt Chamberlain. You know, all these things would be very commendable. Tight game, and then towards the end of it, down, I think, 11, 10, somewhere close to double digits. Jamal Murray is trying to lead the team back, goes out for a layup, and that knee just buckled. And then the MRI comes back the next day, and we're looking at a torn ACL for the guy. Jamal Murray's 24, coming off of a career year. Obviously, remember what he did in the bubble with just his tremendous performance. Basically took the team on his back for two whole rounds. And now, man, we're looking at, what, a year for an ACL injury, Raj? Like, is that how long you would predict for recovery for this kind of injury?
Yeah, like, I think it's going to be probably the standard is, like, 8 to 10 months of rehab, slow on-the-court work. At the earliest, I think he would be back in 10 months. But, again, they're probably going to take it slow considering what happened with Klay Thompson as well.
Man, that sucks. Because, Josh, like, we talked to Ryan last week of the Denver Stiffs, and we were all hyped up. Let's be real. The Nuggets were looking good. They made the move for Aaron Gordon at the deadline. I was feeling it. I was talking about a championship run. And behind Nikola Jokic, obviously, as the front runner for MVP. And then this injury just kills like the whole momentum of the team, right? Like, how do you even carry on at this point?
It's going to be very tough, especially offensively in the playoffs. Because, you know, when Jokic leaves the court, even looking back at, you know, their second last game against Boston, they were up, what, 14 points or so in the third quarter? And then Jokic left the game, and then Boston went on that massive run. They just couldn't keep up. So, you know, going back to that point, like, when Jokic is on the court, they have a 120 offensive rating. And when he leaves the court, they're at 101. And how do you make up for that? You make up for that with Jamal Murray on the court with the bench guys. Because when he's on the court, they have a 118 rating. And when he's off the court, they're at 107. Defensively, you know, they're about even with Jamal Murray. But it just goes to show you, come playoff time, their biggest weakness now is when Jokic leaves the court, they're going to be screwed. Sort of like what Philadelphia went through with Joel Embiid a couple years ago against Toronto, where they were minus 96 or something crazy like that when he was off the court in that series. And he was only off the court for a handful of minutes when Boban was on or Greg Monroe. So that's where Denver's going to run into their biggest issues.
Yeah, it's going to be rough because I saw a stat that said with Murray and Jokic together on the court, the team is like I think it's plus 11 per 100 or plus 11 per 36 minutes or something. And with just Jokic alone, so no Murray, which is pretty much the case going into this, they're like a plus one. So basically this team's offense flows around the two-man game between Jokic and Murray, right? Like, we've seen Murray cut it going off of these picks, all the DHOs that they have, all the pick and rolls. And literally, we've seen opposite pick and rolls, right? Usually you see the 1-5 pick and roll, not a 5-1. So your offense is basically screwed now, right? Like, you're going to rely on Monte Morris, Facundo Campazzo, who's been good on defense, but the guy's tiny. and you're losing out on like a 22 point scorer at this point going into the playoffs, which is like we said before, less than a month away. So you're basically looking for guys like Aaron Gordon to continue scoring like he did in Orlando, Will Barton to actually hit layups, Josh, that's going to be a big issue for him, and MPJ, a guy who's already having a career year in his like second or third year, to take another leap. Raj, man, I don't know how this Nuggets team is going to do this at all.
I think you said it best, that this Nuggets team, the expectations without Murray are completely different, especially playoff Murray. Like, he took over that series against the Jazz and was a huge part of them making the Western Conference Finals last year. And this year, more specifically, I think Denver invested more in their starting five and lost a lot of their depth, so they're not prepared to handle a playoffs run without Murray. I guess the silver lining out of this situation is I think MPJ is finally going to have to be more of a facilitator, and the ball is going to be more in his hand, and I think he's going to develop quite a bit. And obviously you got Aaron Gordon as well, so another player that can put up some buckets and hold the ball in his hand and work off of Jokic. And they do have a serviceable backup in Monte Morris, who's actually very, very good with the ball. Not many turnovers. He can hold his own defensively. He's not a defensive stopper by any means. But I think overall the Nuggets, if they can make it to the second round and maybe get a favorable matchup, that would be best case scenario without Murray. Because like you said, replacing 25 points on the offensive end is not easy. And they're not a particularly deep team either.
Yeah, they're just not as unpredictable, especially come playoff time, without Murray in the lineup, because, you know, as you mentioned, he can score 40-plus on any night, especially come playoff time, and they need that kind of production. And Monte Morris doesn't have that spurt ability, you know, in comparison to a guy like Murray. Yeah. But as you mentioned, I think the biggest thing for them this year is they're going to have to push forward MPJ's progression and development even quicker than they probably were planning. So I think now might be a good time to put the ball in his hands a bit more. Sort of like what Chicago did, you know, with Zach LaVine, or Minnesota did with Zach LaVine as well, where they just made him the nominal point guard a lot of the time and just said, you know what, you're going to turn the ball over a lot, you're going to make a lot of mistakes, but this is going to help you out 2 to 3 years down the line when you might be a 25-plus point per game guy. So even though, you know, the situation happened, this might be a good thing come next year when maybe MPJ takes another leap and then he becomes a superstar type player because of this.
The one thing I want to comment on with Jamal Murray, and again, I think players can come back with ACL injuries, and we've seen it happen a lot more recently. But particularly with a player who isn't as athletic as some of the other guards, I think his game, he's going to have to work really hard on getting back to the same level that he was playing at, because he wasn't relying on raw athleticism, which is a good thing, but losing a small step or being able to create separation is a big part of his game, and hopefully he's able to make a big comeback because he's still relatively young and he's a big part of the Denver's future going forward.
Yeah, I think in street clothes, which, you know, they track all the injuries, they were saying that the ACL injury normally takes about 12 to 14 months before the guy really comes back in decent shape and starts playing the way he used to. And based on that, Murray's going to be out the entire year next year, right? Which, it sucks for Denver, obviously, but hopefully the next year after he comes back fully healthy. And then maybe by then, again, you have MPJ, who's taken another step in his game, and then you have three superstar players. But, you know, Denver's going to have to wait a little bit, unfortunately, to take that next step as a team.
Yep, this was all in the plans as a five-year plan, apparently, to get to the finals. That's rough. Do the Nuggets even bother going after a veteran point guard? Someone like Austin Rivers' name has been floated out there. Jeremy Lin is obviously still on the market. You got guys like Troy Daniels, who was on the Nuggets roster last year. Do you even bother going for someone like that, or do you just ride it out with the team like it is now and sort of see what they can do?
I think they should bring in Isaiah Thomas. You know?
He's already signed.
No, New Orleans let him go.
What?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
The 10-day contract expired.
Doesn't make headlines anymore.
Damn.
They said they might bring him back in the future, but as of right now, he's a free agent. So bring him in, get some spurt ability back in the lineup. You know, have Denver fans cheer for something that's exciting at the point guard position, because, you know, Campazzo, He gives you some highlights against the, you know, really bad teams, but overall he's like a net, you know, minus overall for the year. I think he's what, minus five in terms of net rating? Yeah, minus five for net rating the entire year. So as fun as he is to watch sometimes, he's not as good as some of his highlights show.
Or we can have Will Barton just running the show.
I'm never gonna watch Denver again.
No, thank you. No, thank you. Oh man, that's rough. All right, so how did the top of the West play out now? Are we still expecting Denver to stay in the four seed? Because they're like half a game ahead of LA right now, of the Lakers, that is. Lakers still without LeBron and AD. Portland is, yeah, you know, it's Portland. They have some hot games. And then we were talking about this earlier. Guys like Jusuf Nurkić just don't look like who we expected them to be, right? Like, the guy's obviously still recovering from his injuries, but looks a little bit slower out there. I mean, do you really expect anyone to move between like the four and six slots right now? Because I think it looks pretty stagnant. And if that's the case, that's an awful, awful position for Denver to be in to go against the Lakers.
I think it depends on when LeBron and AD actually come back, because I think Denver has one of the easier schedules going forward, even though it's pretty loaded in terms of overall games and, you know, playing four games in six nights or whatever. But their quality of opponent is not that great. So, I mean, if Jokic is playing every game, you still expect them to be the four or the five. They're not going to drop down to six, I don't think. But with the Lakers, if those guys don't come back quickly, I think eventually, like, they might eventually be lower than the Portland Trail Blazers, and then you're going to have a bunch of teams trying to stay out of their bracket, obviously, at the end of the season.
Oh, man, imagine that. The Phoenix Suns having such a great year. Monty Williams, Coach of the Year candidate, most likely to win. Chris Paul leading this team, and then first round they get the LA Lakers. That'd be fun, putting Jay Crowder against Anthony Davis.
I just want to see the Lakers in the play-in game.
Imagine the Lakers have to play somehow the Dallas Mavericks. That would be just
for the
stupid.
Play-in. That would be exciting.
Yeah.
That would mean the Grizzlies fall out or move their way up. Come on, man.
Hey, you never know. Jaren Jackson's coming back within a week, I think. So.
Yo, Jaren Jackson's been out since like the first week. I don't trust anything.
Yeah, I'm in the same position. I'm again, he's a good young player, but it's not like he has years of experience that he can rely on. Like, him getting in his groove is going to take like a month.
Yeah, he ain't no Jay Crowder, Josh. Shit.
Yeah, 26 points the one night, 0 points the next. Yeah, he's not quite that, no.
Yeah, at least he gets 26 on one night.
Sorry, one half. I should have said one half. It was one half.
That's even better. That sounds great to me.
It's even better. You know, 52 points per game based off of that one half.
I like it. I like that math. Who do you guys have coming out of the West real quick?
Not Denver anymore. I said that last week. I think I jinxed them.
Man. Raj, you pointed this out earlier, but we had Wesley from the Charlotte Hornets come on, and then that same week, LaMelo Ball gets hurt, and then Gordon Hayward gets hurt the week after. We bring in Ryan Blackburn of the Denver Stiffs, talk about the Nuggets, and then boom, Jamal Murray goes down with an ACL tear.
You know what's next? It's like Aaron Gordon injury.
No, don't.
Another 4 week Aaron Gordon injury.
They suffered enough.
It's coming.
Don't do that, man. Don't do that. The team's had enough. Hopefully Daryl Wong doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. I don't know. He told us enough about his dunking days and commercials, so but to answer your question about the West, I think this really opens up the West for three teams that have a lot of expectations in different senses. The Clippers last year, they were expected to be in the Western Conference Finals. This opens up perfectly for them in terms of matchups. The Utah Jazz, who are the number one seed in the West, and you know what, last year they couldn't make it past the first round, and I think they're gonna have to play some good basketball, but they're in a great position. And obviously the newcomers, the Phoenix Suns, so it's a battle between those three teams. I think the Lakers are...
Wait, did you mention the Clippers?
AD and LeBron can come back... Yeah, they're definitely in the running of the teams.
But you said
that
three
can come
teams.
Out of the West.
You mentioned Phoenix as well. Wouldn't that be four teams? Yeah.
No, the Lakers are the team that I'm like, unless they come back healthy, I don't see them competing for the Western Conference Finals.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's a good caveat. But they have to come back healthy, right? I think the whole point of resting LeBron and AD now is so that they're healthy come playoff time.
But it's still different when you're playing like an elite level basketball. Obviously, these are two players that, unlike Jaren Jackson, have a reputation. They have lots of games, lots of playoff experience under their belt in LeBron. And obviously they can turn it on, but still playing yourself into good game shape, making sure the other players are in sync with you, it's not an easy feat. And again, it's just about matchups. Like, imagine the Lakers having to actually play the Phoenix Suns and then have to play the Utah Jazz and then end up playing the Clippers. Like, that's a tough road to go through if they end up in like a 7 seed or a 6 seed.
We need maximum chaos and just get the Clippers and the Lakers as a 3-6 in the first round. Sort of like the Clippers playing the Spurs 4 or 5 years ago in the first round, when those two teams were probably the two best teams in the conference at the time. So
yeah,
let's get that going.
That would be really hype. I'm not going to lie. That would be so hype.
I'm all for it.
Honestly, though, yeah, like,
I think we're all here for
if
that.
The Clippers roster, if they had that roster on a totally different team that didn't have the last named Clippers, I think that they would be the favorites right now by far. So if they just didn't have that Clippers curse, you look at that roster, like, they're stacked. Like, every single one of their role players is playing really well right now. And then you got Paul George, who's on an amazing roll right now, and he's had a great season overall, despite this mysterious foot injury, which doesn't seem like it's a thing anymore after him dunking on like 3 different guys 3 games in a row. And, you know, Kawhi's getting his rest right now, which is what you want as a Clippers fan. So they're looking good right now.
Guess how many guys on their team are shooting over 50% from three?
50 or 40?
5.
Oh, 40%. Sorry. 40%.
8.
You're looking at Marcus Morris Sr., who's at 47.6. Luke Kennard is somehow shooting 47%. I'm only talking about rotation players, obviously, so Amir Coffey and DeMarcus Cousins don't count. Paul George, we already talked about, 44. Terrence Mann, your boy Josh, 42.9. Reggie Jackson, my God, remember when Reggie Jackson was dead in Detroit? Look at this now, 42.2. Batum at 41.9. Remember when Batum was dead in Charlotte? This man collected his millions and is now just chilling in the corner.
The new DL.
And our favorite, Rajon Rondo, 41.7%. Oh, and Patrick Beverley, but whatever. Rajon Rondo, 41% three-point shooter. This Clippers team is incredible.
And you didn't even mention Paul George and Kawhi there, did you?
I said Paul George.
Not Kawhi, then.
Kawhi's shooting 39.5%. Just under.
He doesn't make the cut.
Yeah. He's a scrub compared to Rajon Rondo and Nicholas Batum.
I think their biggest question, though, is like, who do you start at center once Ibaka gets back? Because they played so well with Zubac there, and he gives them a different component in their lineup, because you need more guys that are able to get to the line and get to the basket and get the other team in foul trouble. And Ibaka's not going to provide that, because when Ibaka's in the game, you basically just have 5 jump shooters out there. So you need a guy rolling to the rim, I think.
I think it would depend on the matchup, right? Like, if you're going to play guys like Anthony Davis or Rudy Gobert, then obviously you want Zubac out there. But maybe a team like Denver? I'd put Ibaka on Jokic before I put Zubac.
Really?
Ibaka's smarter, man. He's a smarter defender.
Zubac defended him well last time they played.
Yeah, but not in the series.
I don't know. You get more girth on Jokic. I think it's a better thing, just to beat him up a bit.
Yeah, I think you go with what's hot and what's working, and clearly Zubac is working now. So I think also with Ibaka, he's like in his key playoff run, he was used to coming off the bench and having an impact and having some versatility. And I think ultimately when it comes down to it, who's going to be playing down the stretch, it'll probably be Ibaka with the other four. But to start games, I think they should just go with what's working, and maybe depending on the matchup, but I think they're going to go with what's
working. And again, you look at their roster, they can play any type of style, and you can play Marcus Morris at center a lot of the time versus, you know, different matchups in the playoffs. So they just have that line of flexibility that most teams don't have, and they're stacked in general, having like 12 rotation guys on their team.
Are there any teams in the West that actually go small like that, though? Because if you go from top to bottom, you're looking at centers like Gobert, DeAndre Ayton, the Clippers, who we're currently talking about. Then you're at the four, Jokic, Yusuf Nurkic for Portland, Anthony Davis / Andre Drummond combination in the Lakers, Porzingis. Porzingis is probably like the softest guy, or like least traditional five at that point, right?
Well,
so I mean, I think size isn't really an issue.
I don't think it's a matter of the size. It's a matter of like bringing that size out, right? Because you don't want your center, whether it's Gobert or Ayton or Jokic to be guarding Marcus Morris out there, because they're not defending the basket at that point. And then they're going to get, you know, beat off their dribble and rotation or just give up wide open threes every time. So, I mean, unless you have Jokic on your team that's going to destroy them on the other end, a guy like Gobert is not going to do that against Marcus Morris.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they could just do what Jamal Murray did to Gobert all last playoff run, right? Or what Chris Paul did to him last week, where you just basically run the pick and roll and just kill him off like the one or two dribble moves.
Or what Dallas did, where, I mean, Utah chose to put Gobert on Finney Smith, and Finney Smith had 23 points in that game. So, you know, you try to hide him on like a supposed non-shooter or athletic three who doesn't really do much off the dribble, and yet he still had 23 points that game, right? So, as Ben Simmons said, you know, he's supposedly not a scorer, yet he had 43 points on Gobert. So maybe Gobert isn't as great as we thought come playoff time against these types of matchups.
Oh. Okay, Ben Simmons hunting.
It's funny, too. It's also funny, too, because we're talking about hiding a former Defensive Player of the Year.
Reigning.
That's how the game is right now, though. You're going to try to find, you know, slower-footed guys and just attack them every time, even if it is the reigning Defensive Player of the Year, who defends the basket like nobody else, but, you know, can at times be susceptible on switches and going against guys who really know how to score in the mid-range.
Yeah, it's my bad. He is not reigning. It's Giannis that's reigning, right? Was last year the year that Giannis got DPOY and MVP?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay, that's my bad. My bad. Shall we move this conversation out east and talk about Josh's favorites to come out of the east, the Boston Celtics?
Hey, man, it's not looking so bad anymore, is it?
Yeah, they're kind of rolling right now. They've won 4 straight, 7 out of their last 10. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown finally look, well, Jaylen Brown's looked great all year, but Jason Tatum looks like he's finally closer recovering from COVID 100%. He came out after the Portland game and said that he actually has to use an inhaler before every game, which is pretty wild to me that he's still recovering from it since he got it in January. But, you know, shows how serious it could actually be even for professional athletes. But this team's rolling. Ever since that Daniel Tice trade, it's like they don't need to feed the big guy anymore. They can just do whatever they want with the wings and then sort of have Robert Williams and Tristan Thompson just picking out whatever trash.
It feels like they're passing the ball more now, too. Like, in watching yesterday's game, like, you don't really see Jason Tatum make those skip passes from like one side of the court to the other, but he was doing that yesterday. And Fournier's been out the last few games with health and safety protocols as well, so they've been doing this without their sixth man, you know, on their team. But I think the biggest thing not only is Tatum coming back to near full health, but also Marcus Smart coming back to near full health as well. Because you can just see the difference that he makes. Like, some of the defensive plays he had yesterday were insane. Like diving out of bounds for loose balls and getting ahead of, I think it was Nurkic on one of the key plays down the stretch and stealing the ball. So he makes a massive difference.
That was the same play.
Yeah, the same play, yeah.
That was the same play. This guy dove from one end of the court on offense to try to retrieve a loose ball. Didn't work. So the Blazers go the opposite way. And then this guy sprints back to stop an easy to like dump off pass to Nurkic. And just, like, for a steal, not even a deflection out of bounds. Like, he legitimately just grabbed the ball. Yeah, man, Marcus Smart, what an animal. I mean, defensive, like, glue for this team, right? But that being said, they're still kind of, I don't know, there's just something about them. They still don't seem deep enough to make, like, a real playoff run. Like, I know, Josh, you talked about how you want your, like, primary five guys to be, like, healthy, to be the core going into the playoffs, but do you really trust this team? Like, do you trust them going against real bigs? I'd be worried against teams like Milwaukee and Philadelphia.
Yeah, I still don't think they're on their level, but as we've seen in the West, with one injury, things can change. So if they can somehow stay healthy come playoff time and then something happens to Middleton or Giannis or Embiid, Simmons, etc. And Boston has the experience. You know, they've been in the playoffs multiple years in a row. They've been in the conference finals. So you can't count them out.
Yeah, I think Boston, again, like, they've been playing good basketball, but they don't have the same depth as the top three teams in the East. And also, they need a bit more consistent play from Kemba Walker. I think they go as far as Kemba goes, and obviously, we haven't seen Kemba play in any back-to-backs because he's still coming back from the knee injury, but I think they're on the up, and in the right matchup, they could find themselves in the Eastern Conference Finals. But realistically, they're a tier below those top three teams. And again, I you'd be an idiot to go against Brooklyn.
Damn, Kemba still isn't playing in the tail end of back-to-backs? He's been back for like a couple of months, hasn't he?
That's smart, though.
No, I think they're really trying to save him.
What do you mean? Like, just let him rest from time to time?
Yeah, just he had a knee injury, right? He's had a consistent knee injury the last couple of years. So why not just keep resting him until the playoffs so he's fresh? Like, these regular season games don't really matter, especially with, you know, the crowds not being in place yet. So you're not going to have a home court advantage anyway.
Yeah, I guess so. Do they not have fans in Boston yet?
I think they're one of the last teams. I don't think they have fans yet, from what I remember. I don't think it's... No, I don't think so.
I don't think they do. I don't remember seeing fans there. But, they got to be one of the last, like, five or seven teams to not have fans in the crowd, right?
Yeah, it's like them and the LA teams.
Yeah, they're...
Yeah. Do the Knicks?
Yeah, the Knicks started letting people in 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, at the beginning of April.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can't think of any others then, other than those guys. I guess a lot of the teams are in, like, the Midwest, so, you know. No rules there, I guess.
We know. The Wild West.
Oh, man. Have you guys seen KD come back to Brooklyn? Looks pretty healthy.
Okay, I got to ask something. Why did he play in yesterday's game, and now he's sitting out today? It must be just Brooklyn doesn't want to show a lot of their cards against Philadelphia, right?
Tail end of a back-to-back, Josh.
Yeah, so why not sit him yesterday and then play him today?
Because you can only sit the tail end, apparently, not the front end.
Shouldn't they get fined?
I also think...
Like, this is a nationally televised game, right?
Yeah, but he is coming off of an injury, so it would be in their best interest. And anyways, their owner's rich as hell. Like, I think that they don't give a shit about that. And more importantly, obviously with KD going at Shannon Sharpe, like, this guy is sensitive. Like, no matter what anyone wants to say, like, this guy cares way too much about other people's opinions of him.
Wait, what is this with Shannon Sharpe? I think I missed this.
Apparently Shannon Sharpe blocked him because I don't even remember the whole ordeal. I'm not following it. But then KD called Shannon Sharpe out for blocking him on Instagram. And it's a bunch of garbage. Like, why do you care? Like, you're Kevin Durant. Like, you're arguably the second best player in basketball right now. You're playing in a team that you chose. Your team's probably going to make the finals. You're probably going to win it all. Like, shut your mouth and just, like, show them who's boss.
I think that...
Shut up and dribble, Kevin Durant.
I think the topic was Shannon Sharpe said something on his Fox Sports show about what KD said. He said that he was quoting KD, where KD supposedly said that in beating LeBron. You know, if LeBron's a GOAT and he beat LeBron, what does that make KD? And KD supposedly never said that. So when KD called him out about it on Twitter, Shannon Sharpe was like, yeah, you did say that. I can prove it. And KD's like, all right, I'll come on your show. And then Shannon Sharpe just blocked him.
Come on, man.
I think it also goes further because KD also said it's not about championships anymore. Something about that. Which was a bit weird because he's in pole position to win another championship.
I mean, if KD cares about what Adrian 06969 on Twitter says, of course he's going to care about what Shannon Sharpe says. So he follows everything.
I like it. Screw the haters, KD. Do whatever you want with your Twitter fingers, man. It's entertainment. This is his time off. Who are you to tell him how to spend his time? If KD wants to roast some people on Twitter, let him roast. I'm here for it. I'm Team KD from now on, guys.
Wow. You joined the snake bandwagon. The snake wagon.
Yeah, why not? Why not? If you're just chilling at home, like, what's the difference if he's on Twitter commenting to people or not? You know, does it really affect his game? No.
So you're...
Does it kill his work ethic?
You're a Brooklyn Nets fan now.
Yeah, where Brooklyn at? Brooklyn. No, not really. I've always been a KD fan, let's be real. Everyone loves actual KD's game, so... Whatever, man. It's not like the Twitter trolling is affecting his game. I don't really care otherwise.
The best thing that can happen this year is that team losing in the first round.
I mean, I don't like Harden or Kyrie, so I'm here for it. I like KD and I like Jeff Green.
We need to find the most difficult matchup for them in the first round. Like, either Boston or Miami needs to be the 7 seed.
It's got to be Miami.
Miami would be nice.
Yeah, it's got to be Miami.
I think Boston would be interesting, too, as a matchup, because they have a lot of guys that can defend those three.
Yeah, but then they're just going to pick on Kemba Walker.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, who are you going to pick on Miami, right?
And Brooklyn's much deeper than Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Miami can't score, though. And they wouldn't have to travel. Like, you need to be able to score against that team. I think Boston can score against them.
No, you're missing it all, Josh. You make them go to Miami, and then James Harden gets the South Beach flu. Game over.
That's true.
Come on.
Yeah, we need...
And KD. You don't know what KD could get there.
We need to find something for Kyrie, too. Like, one of those... what do you call it? The flat earth groups. Get him into one of those and make sure he doesn't come out for the game at 7 o'clock.
I don't think you're going to find that in South Beach, man.
Well, maybe in Boston.
Find a lot of things in South Beach, but not that.
You get like Harvard guys talking to Kyrie. Who knows?
Oh, man.
That's why he left the Boston area. He couldn't take the intellectual talk. Couldn't compete.
Yeah, that's it.
It seems like every time he puts out like one of those cryptic messages on Twitter, he sits out the very next game for personal reasons. It's very weird.
Did you guys hear the latest rumor about him? Why he's sitting out these couple of games?
He's converting to Judaism?
No, he converted to Islam.
Oh, okay.
And so he's, So he's going to fast for Ramadan, but he has to like adjust his body for it.
Oh, that's nonsense. Come on, man. Hakeem did it for like how many years in a row and still is putting up 40-20s? Come on, Kyrie.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't mind it. Hakeem also fasted since he was a child in Africa, you know. I'm not comparing anyone to Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, come on, dude. That's not fair at all.
I got to find somebody else that played somewhat well and was not Hakeem then. Can't think of anybody right now. Maybe next podcast.
Yeah, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
He was good.
I don't know if he played during Ramadan, but, you know, we'll take it. All right, you guys got anything else you want to cover before we hit Stats Corner here?
All right, so for Stats Corner this week, we're going to be talking about clutch stats. So in terms of defense, can you name the top five defensive teams in the clutch this season?
Utah?
Utah is not in this group because I guess they win far too many games by 5 points or more.
So they don't even qualify.
Or the close games that they're in, they just lose because they're going to lose in the playoffs the same way.
Oh, wow.
Not Milwaukee. Come on now.
They might be. Milwaukee West, you know.
All right. This is an easy one. The Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah. Charlotte is number four at 98 defensive rating.
Wow. What about Miami?
Miami's number nine.
Damn.
What about the Phoenix Suns?
Phoenix is number 15, actually.
Wow.
Well, we're not very good at this.
They can score some points in clutch, but defensively, they're not quite there yet.
Oh, the Lakers.
Lakers are number six.
Oh, wow.
Jesus Christ.
Well, a lot of teams that are in the clutch a lot.
The top two are in the East. Both playoff teams.
Brooklyn.
No. Brooklyn. Get out of here.
Philly.
Philly is number two. 95 defensive rating.
So there's a team better than 95?
There is
the
one.
Knicks?
That is correct. Mr.
Wow.
Ice himself.
Wow.
93.4. They can't score, but at least they stop people.
That Tom Thibodeau effect.
That's right.
Wow, okay. So how many are we missing?
You're missing two. One of them you're never going to get because it really doesn't make any sense, and they haven't played many games in the clutch, and they're a terrible Eastern Conference team.
Detroit?
No, Cleveland.
Oh.
And the other team you might get, they're one of the best clutch teams because they have probably the best clutch performer. So there you go.
Portland?
Yeah. Portland is at number five at 98.2. So it's not just Dame that's winning games. The defense, too.
Wow.
That's the Carmelo effect.
Yeah.
Sure.
You saw Carmelo against Boston? Woo! That was prime Carmelo right there. God.
And can you name the bottom five teams, the worst defensive teams in the clutch so far this year?
So who just gives it up?
Who gives it up?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn is actually middle of the pack, number 14.
Huh.
No.
What who loses about, a lot of tight games?
What about the Sacramento Kings?
They are at number 23, which is basically seventh worst, so not quite. Almost.
Loses a lot of games. Oh, the Hawks.
The Hawks are just outside the top five.
Damn.
Or bottom five, I should say.
Bottom five. I'm gonna say the New Orleans Pelicans.
New Orleans is no. They're closer to the top end of things versus the bottom.
Wow.
Your favorite. The Carl Anthony Timberwolves.
The Carl Anthony Timberwolves are outside of the bottom 10, actually. So, no.
Wow.
So, the Indiana Pacers or something like this.
All right, you guys are terrible at this. So, let's go with three of them, or two of them are definitely Western Conference playoff teams. One of them's on the bubble.
Dallas?
Dallas is the worst. They are 127.2 defensive rating in the clutch, which is pretty bad.
That's amazingly awful. Woo, okay.
The Memphis Grizzlies?
Memphis, they're actually closer to the top than they are the bottom.
Yeah, Memphis is nice defensively, man. They got a team full of rotation players.
Man, I only know the good defensive teams. I can't do well in this.
So one of those is a team we talked about already in the Western Conference that is a definite contender, but this might be their kryptonite. Just clutch performance overall. They're a jump shooting team, and they also give up a lot of points as well.
The Clippers?
Clippers are the second worst at 125.4.
Surprising. With a closer like Kawhi, that's very surprising. But I guess if you don't play defense, you don't play defense.
The other one made a big trade at the trade deadline.
My guys?
Nah, I don't think so.
Oh. My guys in the East?
Nope.
Oh.
Actually, they're part of the bottom five, so yes, Detroit is the fifth worst.
See, you can't have a bottom team without mentioning Detroit.
Yeah.
What kind of bullshit list is that?
And then you have two bubble teams, one in the East, one in the West.
Who?
Chi-Town?
Yep. Third worst at 121. And then in the West.
Bubble team in the West?
It's a one-man team.
That we haven't mentioned?
Not Spurs. One-man team.
I'm 0 for 5 or 0 for 8.
Bubble team in the West. We already said no to Memphis, no to Spurs, yes to Dallas. LA's on the cusp, and they're too good defensively. Portland already is top 5.
They literally only have one player on this team.
How are we so bad at this, Russ?
This is embarrassing.
I don't know.
You better keep this in the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, this is crazily bad.
This is being cut right now. the Golden State Warriors.
Because it'd be too obvious. I thought the one-man team would give it away.
The Golden State Warriors.
Thank you, finally. Oh, my goodness.
Well, hey, you know what? Shea is a one-man team, but he's not playing, and they're not that bad defensively, I guess.
Yo, would you rather have the Golden State Warriors for the next 5 years or the Oklahoma City Thunder for the next 5 years?
Golden State Warriors.
I think you have to pick Golden State because they're probably going to trade their pick and then probably Wiseman too to get another player. Because you have to like maximize Curry's prime while you still have it. So probably Golden State.
Yeah. Okay, fine. But who's got a better young core?
Well,
aside from Shea.
I mean,
like, remove Shea from the conversation.
Okay, see, it's Pokuševski. I mean, come on.
And Moses Brown, man.
You see what Lu Dortia did yesterday? He had 44 points against the Jazz.
Yeah,
it's because they probably just left him open. Royce O'Neal.
They left him open the playoffs last year. He couldn't hit anything besides the last game, the game 7.
That was Houston, though.
I also think it's a difference because when you're going to play OKC, you know that they have no one. And these players are getting ample opportunities to put shots up. So they're obviously going to have nicer numbers. And if you're actually playing clutch basketball or important basketball, that's when things are actually quite different.
How dare you downplay Lu Dort's amazing game against one of the best defensive teams in the league? He shut down Mitchell
and he
scored 44 points. How dare you, sir?
This guy, man,
he's great.
So now he's just gonna he's pretty good.
You know, he's repping Montreal Nord, man.
They got a nice backcourt.
Oh yeah, All right. Well, I think that's all the time we've got for this week, guys. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. Give us those 5 stars. Leave some good comments. We're on all the major podcast platforms. We're talking Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google. And you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at HoopsCornerPod. And until next time, peace.